upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And welcome to Technocracy News. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News and Trends. And our first story today is titled Follow the Money, the Deep, Deep State of Climate Change. It just so happens there's been a lot of news on climate change lately. Part of the reason is because of the big convention that just took place at the UN in New York City, and that generated a lot of headlines. But there have been other stories related to it, perhaps timed to catch the interest of that meeting. I don't know. This story in particular was written by F. William Engdahl, and I want to be very careful as I present the story to you, because I'm not making an endorsement of F. William Engdahl in any way, shape, or form, and I would caution you to be very careful about reading any other works by F. William Engdahl. He's a writer for many different publications, including the far-left-wing Lyndon LaRouche and his organization. So I include this article in particular because it has to do with sustainable development, the financing of green everything, and is pertinent to our discussion here. It may not be completely accurate. I haven't researched everything, but there's a lot of material in here that is interesting. So it's included in the anthology of articles posted on Technocracy News and Trends. And I said in this article at the top, it's not what you think. There is no innocent, purist, or benevolent agenda behind global warming propaganda. None. It's all about money and control that is orchestrated and funded by the same global elite who created globalization in the first place. And so here's a little bit of his article just to get a sense of it. He says, under climate, now who would have thought? The very mega corporations and mega billionaires behind the globalization of the world economy over the recent decades, whose pursuit of stakeholder value and cost reduction, who have wreaked so much damage to our environment, both in the industrial world and in the underdeveloped economies of Asia, Africa, Latin America, are the leading backers of the grassroots, quote-unquote, decarbonization movement from Sweden to Germany to the USA and beyond. Is it pangs of guilty conscience, or could it be the deeper agenda of the financialization of the very air we breathe and more? Whatever one may believe about the dangers of CO2 and the risks of global warming creating a global catastrophe of 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius average temperature rise in the next 12 years, it is worth noting who is promoting the current flood of propaganda and climate activism. Subtitle, Green Finance, several years before Al Gore and others decided to use a young Swedish schoolgirl to be the poster child for climate action urgency, or in the USA, the call of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for a complete reorganization of the economy around a Green New Deal, the giants of finance began devising schemes for steering hundreds of billions of future funds to investments in often worthless climate companies. In 2013, after years of careful preparation, a Swedish real estate company, Vaskronen, issued the first corporate green bond. They were followed by others, including Apple, SNCF, and the major French bank, Crédit Agricole. In November 2013, Elon Musk's problem-riddled Tesla Energy issued the first solar asset-backed security. Today, according to something called the Climate Bonds Initiative, more than $500 billion in such green bonds are outstanding. The creators of the bond idea state their aim is to win over a major share of the $45 trillion of assets under management globally, which have made nominal commitment to invest in, quote, climate-friendly projects. Bonnie Prince Charles, future UK monarch, along with the Bank of England and City of London Finance, have promoted green financial instruments led by green bonds to redirect pension plans and mutual funds towards green projects. A key player in the linking of the world financial institutions with the green agenda is outgoing Bank of England head Mark Carney. In December 2015, the Bank for International Settlements Financial Stability Board, chaired then by Carney, created the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosure to advise, quote, investors, lenders, and insurance about climate-related risks. That was certainly a bizarre focus for world central bankers. In 2016, the TCFD, along with the City of London Corporation and the UK government, initiated the Green Finance Initiative, aiming to channel trillions of dollars to green investments. The central bankers of the FSB nominated 31 people to form the TCFD, chaired by billionaire Michael Bloomberg of the Financial Wire. It includes key people from J.P. Morgan Chase, from BlackRock, one of the world's biggest asset managers with almost $7 trillion, Barclays Bank, HSBC, the London Hong Kong Bank, repeatedly fined for laundering drug and other black funds, Swiss Re, the world's second largest reinsurance company, China's ICBC Bank, Tata Steel, Eni Oil, Dow Chemical, mining giant BHP Billiton, and David Blood of Al Gore's Generation Investment, LLC. In effect, it seems the foxes are writing the rules for the new green henhouse. Bank of England's Carney was also a key actor in efforts to make the City of London into the financial center of global green finance. The outgoing UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, in July 2019, released a white paper called Green Finance Strategy, Transforming Finance for a Greener Future. The paper states, quote, "One of the most influential initiatives to emerge is the Financial Stability Board's Private Sector Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, supported by Mark Carney and chaired by Michael Bloomberg. This has been endorsed by institutions representing $118 trillion of assets globally. There seems to be a plan here. The plan is the financialization of the entire world economy using the fear of an end-of-world scenario to reach arbitrary aims such as, quote, net zero greenhouse gas emissions." Subtitle, Goldman Sachs, Key Actor. The omnipresent Wall Street bank, Goldman Sachs, which spawned, among others, ECB outgoing President Mario Draghi and the Bank of England head Carney, has just unveiled the first global index of top-ranking environmental stocks, done along with the London-based CDP, formerly the Carbon Disclosure Project. The CDP, notably, is financed by investors such as HSBC, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, American International Group, and State Street Corp. The new index aims to lure investment funds, state pension systems such as CalPERS, that is the California Public Employees Retirement System, and CalSTRS, the California State Teachers Retirement System, with a combined $600 billion in assets, to invest in their carefully chosen targets. Top-rated companies in the index include Alphabet, which owns Google, Microsoft, ING Group, Diageo, Philips, Danone, and conveniently, Goldman Sachs. Well, this article goes on. The idea of the money behind the green economy movement is basically settled science, if you will. Well, at least settled monetary science. Companies like Goldman Sachs, State Street Bank, the Bank for International Settlements, which is the central bank, two central banks in the world, they all are jumping onto the bandwagon for green finance, which will finance, of course, the green transition. This is a complete 52-card pickup, basically, on the whole world's economic system. In the process, they intend to capture the resources of the world directly. Money is not the issue now. Getting direct control over the resources is the issue. And all of the money that has been stuck away for various future needs, like retirement funds, for instance, like 401k funds, like funds that are held by governments to serve the people. All of these assets are zealously being sprung from their prison to flow into green investments, which, of course, they and they alone are waiting to harvest for their own particular benefit. This story will give you some food for thought as to what is really going on behind the scenes with the money. Follow the money, follow the power. The next story is slightly related to this. The most recent global climate strike, which we have seen in the news relentlessly, is heavily backed by George Soros. Surprise, surprise. I wrote at the top of this, while the public is expected to believe the global climate strike was a grassroots movement of young students, the reality, funding, and organization is far from youth-driven. Rather, it is a massive and purposely deceptive manipulation. That's been my assessment, by the way, as you know, ever since this started. The article states, while 16-year-old Greta Thunberg has become the face of the climate strike movement, it's no longer gatherings of children. A litany of well-funded left-wing activist groups have partnered to generate a week of climate protests known as the Global Climate Strike, September 20 through 27, bookending the UN Climate Conference. At least 22 of those partners have been funded by liberal billionaire George Soros, who spends nearly $1 billion per year on groups pushing a variety of left-wing causes. Together, 22 organizations listed as international or North American partners of the Global Climate Strike received at least $24.8 million from Soros Open Society Network between 2000 and 2017. The liberal media celebrated Thunberg's arrival in New York and the global protest held September 20, and will likely do the same for the second round. ABC's Maggie Rooley shrieked, "Now look at what her movement has become." MSNBC even promoted grotesque gestures such as German protesters' simulated hangings, calling it a striking visual message to push for action. Berliners stood on ice blocks with nooses around their necks. "A stark call for change before it's too late," reported a commentator on MSNBC. Strikes are scheduled in 150 countries for September 27. Undoubtedly, the promotion and partnership of hundreds of liberal groups, including 350.org, which hosts the climate strike website, Earth Justice and Friends of the Earth, helped the strikes balloon in size. The September 20 strikes drew around 4 million activists, with 2,500 protests scheduled in 163 countries around the world, according to Vox. Democratic candidate Tom Steyer's Next Gen America was also a partner, no surprise there, by the way, along with the Sierra Club, which has gotten millions from former Mayor Michael Bloomberg. In recent years, Soros funding went to at least 22 of those partnering groups, including 350.org, Amnesty International, Avaaz, Color of Change, and People's Actions. Those groups had various climate-related agendas, from reducing global carbon emissions to less than 350 parts per million, campaigning for 100% clean energy, banning new fossil fuel projects, to a green civil rights movement. This story also is a very serious story that should be read by everyone. You need to understand where the money's coming from to fund these things. You cannot possibly have a grassroots movement in over 150 countries around the world. Absolutely impossible without some type of orchestrated global backing. Any amount of common sense will tell you this. It's hard enough to get a grassroots movement going in a single state or even in a single community or county. But they spread this all over the world. Boom, there it was. Students leaving their classrooms. In my opinion, this is the most egregious manipulation of young people that this editor has ever seen in history. The next story will take us back in time. The title is Flashback: European Architects Always Intended Technocracy. This indeed is a flashback story, originally published on 16 November 2011 by the Guardian newspaper in the UK. Its title was In Defense of Europe's Technocrats. And this is a story that just should not die, in my opinion. My short comments on this are the EU was largely architected by members of the Trilateral Commission, who intended technocracy from the very start. The EU formally started with the 1992 Maastricht Treaty in the same year of the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which created Agenda 21 and Sustainable Development, aka technocracy. You have to understand the political irony of this, that both the EU and Agenda 21 and Sustainable Development were sprung in the same year, 1992. Many have had different thoughts on what the EU really represented, whether it was just an amorphous mass of bureaucrats getting together and kind of moving forward in random fashion. That's not the case. This article was very well thought out, and even though the author does not bring in the Trilateral Commission, readers of Technocracy News and Trends know that they were the ones originally that maneuvered and positioned policy for the EU to get started, and it was technocracy that they intended. So this article states, listen to the clarity. Leafing through the British press over the last week, you can't but notice increased sightings of a rare political subspecies, the technocrat. Prominent technocrats include the Italian Prime Minister designate Mario Monti, by the way, a member of the Trilateral Commission, and the Greek PM Lucas Papademos, by the way, another member of the Trilateral Commission, who have been parachuted into the top job. The papers say, in order to act out dictates of their paymasters in Germany and France. In the Telegraph, Christopher Booker has revealed that, quote, EU architects never meant it to be a democracy. Technocracy was always the plan. In the same paper, Charles Moore has proclaimed that, quote, left and right should agree that this is not the time for technocrats and Frankfurters, but real Democrats. And largely, they do. On these pages, there have been a number of comment pieces and editorials pointing out Europe's democratic deficit, questioning whether the rise of the technocrats is wise or even effective. Even the sober Financial Times has a concerned editorial entitled, Enter the Technocrats, no less than 10 months after proclaiming the, quote, strange death of technocracy. I counted at least a half a dozen articles that saw glaring parallels to European appeasement in Munich in 1938, the Telegraph is already pondering sending Spitfires across the channel. Well, when the Guardian, the Telegraph, and even those arch contrarians at Spiked Online are in agreement over something, some alarm bells should go off. So let's at least try to see if there might be another side to the story here. The article continues, the word technocracy comes from the Greek word techne, meaning skill, and kratos, meaning power. Technocrats thus literally promise to be problem solvers, politicians who make decisions based on their expertise or specialist knowledge of a particular subject, rather than to please a particular interest group or political party. The term is commonly attributed to the engineer William H. Smythe of Berkeley, California in 1919, one of the early technocrats, by the way, though the idea that a country should be organized and spiritually led not by the church, feudal landowners, or the military, but by industrial chiefs and men of science, goes back to the early socialist thinker Saint-Simon. Now, indeed, Henri de Saint-Simon was the father of technocracy, as well as the father of transhumanism. I have discussed Saint-Simon in some detail in both of my books, Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, as well as Technocracy Rising, The Trojan Horse of Globalization. The article continues, yes, there's no harm in saying it. Technocracy once used to be a big idea for the international left. That's partially true, but the technocracy movement was never associated directly with the international left. In 1930s America, for instance, it wasn't a term of abuse, but the program for a new social utopia. In the middle of the Great Depression, an emergent technocratic movement led by engineers and dissident economists such as Thorsten Veblen and Howard Scott proposed that populist politicians simply weren't capable to fix the system. Quote, the maladministration and chaos imposed over the industrial mechanism by arbitrary rule of extraneous interest has reached such a point that many technicians feel the urgent need of confederating their forces in a program of industrial coordination based not on belief, but exact knowledge, thundered a pamphlet by the Technical Alliance. The American technocratic movement was short-lived, not least because the flaws in its thinking were so apparent. Their belief that everyone could ever be completely apolitical in their decision-making now strikes us as naive. No one remembers the technocrats' plan of plenty, and everyone remembers Roosevelt's New Deal. I will comment, by the way, that there's a lot of similarities between the technocrats' plan of plenty and Roosevelt's New Deal. And in fact, many technocrats from that very day entered into the Roosevelt administration and took technocracy with them. Over the course of the next few decades, technocracy was not a dodgy rep. Veneration of industrial progress and unchecked rule by bureaucrats became a trademark of totalitarian regimes in Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia. George Orwell describes technocracy as a precursor to fascism. What was Adolf Eichmann, if not a technocrat? Some might say, though, that technocratic ideals and practices never really went away. Henry Elsner's critical account of the movement floats the idea that the New Deal, with its embracing of social engineering, was more of a synthesis of technocratic and democratic ideals than an alternative. This article goes on. Remember, it was written in 2011. That's why I call it today a flashback. These are the kinds of things that simply cannot be forgotten in the modern world. They nailed it back then. Europe was having its own economic crisis that really dwarfed ours, and they decided the thing to do was to send in technocrats to take over both Greece and Italy to set their economic machine back on its feet again. In both cases, those new PMs, unelected and unaccountable, were simply appointed. They were both members of the Trilateral Commission. Isn't that a strange coincidence? Well, not to readers of Technocracy News and Trends. We must not forget our history. We must not forget articles like this who hit the nail directly on the head in the right context. And now, many years later, we see the outcome. The European Union was set up originally to be a technocracy. Agenda 21, sustainable development, was set up as an alternative economic system to replace capitalism and free enterprise, which was modeled after technocracy of the 1930s. So we see the two-pronged attack right here in front of us. Agenda 21 taking place in the Southern Hemisphere, the European Union taking place in the Northern Hemisphere, and oh, they've been trying ever since to get the United States to follow the same model. We're not so compliant as Europe was. As far as the technocrat elite are concerned, they look at the United States as a herd of cats that refuse to be herded. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.